On ABC Local Radio, you're with Rod Quinn. Time to talk DVDs with Eddie Ivamy. Eddie, a very good morning to you.
Good morning to you as well, Rod.
A couple of comedies to talk about, or at least I'm told they're comedies, because one of them, I didn't laugh once. The other one I had quite a few chuckles at, and I thought was a lot better than I thought it was going to be, and that's the movie we're going to talk about first.
No problems at all. So Central Intelligence, Rod, is a new buddy comedy from America, which stars Kevin Hart, who is at present one of, if not the biggest stand-up comedians going around, especially in America. He constantly sells out huge shows, and his films so far have made quite a bit of money. And Dwayne The Rock Johnson, I'm sorry to call him The Rock, he'll always be The Rock to me, but here they are in a bit of a buddy comedy, action comedy, I'd say, in this film Central Intelligence. Look, we have The Rock here, who plays an initially dweeby character in high school who gets bullied, picked upon. He's everyone's the butt of the joke. And Kevin Hart is the popular guy at high school and college, and everyone thinks he's going to be this hugely successful guy moving forward. And wouldn't you know it, the roles switch, and Dwayne The Rock Johnson ends up being a bit of a super spy, a bit of a Jason Bourne-like character, whereas Kevin Hart is an accountant. His wife isn't really moving anywhere fast, and At a reunion coming up, they meet together, and a bit of an adventure ensues. So it's generic-ish plot. We've probably seen it done in different times before, but it has its simple charms, I think, Rod.
Simple charms, yes, I suppose so. Look, I didn't expect anything from this film. I really thought, you know, I've seen these buddy action comedies so many times. Kevin Hart, I know he's obviously a huge star. He's one of the biggest stars in the world, but he has an audience that isn't generally all that big in Australia. He's much bigger in America than over here. And The Rock, yeah, he's transitioned nicely from wrestling to a certain type of movie. He's not the world's greatest actor. He's certainly not the worst, but he's not the world's greatest. But I got to say, I thought this movie had a little more than I expected. There were a few laughs in it. There's even a joke about The Rock at one point. It kind of goes off track a little bit. I think it's probably a little bit too long, but most films are. But I think that, you know, if you're looking for a fairly mindless comedy, then this is probably it. It's one of those movies that I presume this doesn't happen anymore, but you know, on a Friday night, you'd go down to the DVD store and you'd get a basket of 5 for $10 or something. You'd throw this one in to watch first before you got to the films you really wanted to see.
Yeah, I think that's a great way of putting it. It is one that you'll probably see in the years to come thrown on TV on a Friday night at the 9:30 time slot. And I do believe it would probably have an audience that is probably quite fond of it in a way. It's something you can pop on and just have in the background almost. And as you say about Kevin Hart, probably doesn't have a huge audience over here, but The Rock is, whatever it is about him, he does have a charm about him, and he's quite easy to like. And I think it's hard to hate his films, which is quite interesting. Even when they're a lot poorer than this one, you still probably put up with it a bit more because he's in it. And I think the matching of these two together here is quite funny. You've got The Rock, who's this big, lumbering ex-wrestler, and you've got Kevin Hart, who must only be about 5'6 or 5'7. He's very small and quite loud. But look, I have yet to probably figure out the charms of Kevin Hart as such.
Yeah.
I probably don't see why he's as big as he is. Obviously, he's got a massive audience in America. Australia maybe might get there one day, and really, maybe if he tours here or something like that, it might take him to the next level. But he definitely, to me, doesn't have those comedic chops in film yet that, say, an Eddie Murphy or someone like that had back in the day, and other comedians that have made the move into films. His films so far to me have actually been quite poor, and I think this is one of the better ones. Ride Along 1 and 2, they were both quite average. Get Hard was a very average comedy. Wedding Planner something like that. They're all pretty forgettable, and why Central Intelligence is quite forgettable as well. It does, as you say, probably have a lot more laughs than those films, which was refreshing, because I too probably went into this one thinking, you know what, I don't think I'm going to laugh too much at this, but especially the first maybe 30 minutes.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah, very
strong. It's much funnier, yeah.
It was, and I thought, you know what, this could be really good. And it did die off after that, and it probably tried to become this weird comedic Jason Bourne type film, I thought, with this rock character dispatching all the people coming after him. And the story got quite far-fetched and quite silly. Obviously, the film is silly in a lot of ways, but the story went right off the rails. And, yeah, as you said, definitely too long. But comedies these days seem to have a tendency to do that for whatever reason. Gone are the days of 80 minutes of comedy. Here you're looking at 100 minutes plus most of the time, or, you know, near 2 hours, which is often very hard to maintain a really good hit rate. So this film probably suffers a little bit like that.
You're right, though. The first half hour, when we are developing the characters, it is very funny. In fact, I'd say even witty at times. I mean, the character of The Rock, he's a big fan of the movie 16 Candles, and there's quite a few jokes made about that. Yeah. And I think that works really well. The relationship that Kevin Hart has with his wife is kind of worked very nicely as well. And I did find in that first half hour, I thought, yeah, okay, this movie might go somewhere. Once it becomes kind of an action comedy, it loses that comedic momentum, and there's, I don't know if it's a red herring, but there's all this story about this spy called the Black Badger, and who is the Black Badger? And I think we were misdirected poorly in that. I still don't know who the Black Badger is.
No, and it all feels rather pointless, doesn't it, in the end? For some films, it's great to have those type of MacGuffins and red herrings, but for a film like this, it's unnecessary. The charms of the two being together should have really been able to carry the film enough. You didn't need all these other side plots and things happening. And I thought maybe as well the last, 10 or 15 minutes was really average. It just wasn't. All these things kind of happened. As you say, some things weren't even really tied up. And at the end of the day, I was kind of thinking, oh, is this really the best way to end this film?
Yeah.
And again, I think sometimes films that go this long and probably have a rather complicated plot when it didn't need to be, struggled to tie things up, and it definitely happened here. But yeah, as you say, if people are looking for a film that really would have been back in the day, just one you pick off the shelf and think, you know what, this will be good while I'm having a bit of dinner or relaxing on the couch, it is quite fun. Probably wasn't a huge hit over here as it was, as we say, in America and things like that, but it's, you wouldn't be surprised down the track if there ends up being a Central Intelligence 2, something like that. And I know that The Rock and Hart are teaming up again with the remake of Jumanji, so they obviously like working together, and it'll be interesting to see how that goes ahead. I know Jumanji's a pretty well-loved film, even though it has its flaws, so Jumanji will be scrutinised a little bit more than these other adventures, I'd think, and be a big test for Hart, because, as we say, if you look at his films so far, he's actually, unfortunately, yet to really nail a good comedy, one of those ones that you'd want to watch numerous times. So be interesting to see how they work together next, but that'll be a big film when it comes out, probably sometime next year.
Kevin Hart is big in the African-American community. I think that's obviously where his strongest audience is, and that obviously is not as big in Australia as it is in America. And he's a real hero there and hugely popular, and, you know, I'm happy for that to be the case. He has the talent to carry a film, possibly. But again, this plot of an average guy being dragged along on a spy escapade by the spy, we've seen so many, many, many times before. Melissa McCarthy did it in Spy, which I thought was a terrible movie. I mean, we've seen it so many times before. I don't think this adds too much.
No, and it feels like a different riff of a version of like a 48 Hours or an I Spy, Shanghai Noon, something like that. It's funny, it seems to pop up every year, doesn't it, this type of film, and I just don't really know sometimes why they need to make something that feels like we've seen it before. This idea, I think, could have gone in different directions, and at the end, as you said, it probably ends up just being a really slightly varied version of what we've seen before, and I think that hurts films, but especially, like you say, once that 30 minutes kind of goodwill dies off, you start thinking, oh, wouldn't mind if this actually ended. But look, like I said, they obviously enjoy working together, and it made a lot of money in America, but it seems like every Kevin Hart thing that comes out does. Even his stand-up films make a lot of money at the box office over there, which is quite rare in today's modern age. So good on him. Probably still yet to really make a mark in my mind, but he's having a good time, I think, probably making some very good money while he's doing it.
I'm sure. You know, I think back to a film like Gross Point Blank, which, again, was a brilliant idea of a hitman going back to his high school reunion. That didn't work, as far as I'm concerned. And I think it would have been a better, more interesting comedy if it was a spy going back to his high school reunion and no one knew who he was, because he doesn't look a bit like the kid he was at school. So maybe that would have been a better plot. They went off in another direction. That's okay. The movie is okay. It's nothing great, but I've seen much, much worse. Eddie Ivamy is our guest talking DVDs. And when you're talking about much, much worse, you're talking about the Ghostbusters remake.
Oh, I tell you what, Rod, it's going to be hard to say too many nice things about this one. I'm glad that you're on the train with me on this one, because I was hoping I didn't have to defend my dislike towards it.
Can I ask before, this is a comedy, right?
Oh, look, supposedly.
Were there any funny scenes or funny lines in it?
Mild, very, very mild.
Let me say this. I thought Chris Hemsworth was good.
Absolutely. I was about to say, if there's laughs to be had, they're probably stemming from him. And and good on him for having a fun time. I think he's having a bit of a good time with this one. And I think he needed it, actually, because he'd done a few things to me that were a little bit meh. So it was good to see him do something here that was a bit of fun. He did it in Vacation, but that was very, 5-10 minutes. He's got a lot more screen time here, but gee whiz, Rod. There was an incredible amount of hate levelled towards this film, even when it was announced. And as things got further on, that hate didn't die off. And when the trailer first came out, it's one of the most, if not the most, disliked videos on YouTube, which isn't a record you'd want. People just scathed it. Fans of the series, I do believe critics were overly kind to it. I think some of them were wary on taking this film apart because of the all-female cast, perhaps, whatever political things may lie there. But, yeah, look, this Ghostbusters film, for any fan of the old films or fans of comedy, they're going to be very disappointed.
I was never a fan of the original Ghostbusters, but it is Citizen Kane compared with this one.
Yeah, it's Oscar material, isn't it?
Oh, boy. Okay, so there are these four Ghostbusters, female. Doesn't matter that they're all female. That didn't have any effect on me. I'm not a Melissa McCarthy fan, but Kristen Wiig is okay. I can't even remember who the other two were. And it's just a nothing film. You know, everything that happens is totally predictable. There are no laughs in it whatsoever. You can see where the laughs are supposed to be, because they think, oh, we'll do this and people will find it funny. I didn't find it funny at all.
Look, to ever reimagine a property that is loved by many people like Ghostbusters, there has to be a very good reason for it. And at the end of the day, there is really nothing in this film that would suggest what drew people to it, other than the fact they thought maybe it was a great way to make some money. And really, it wastes the cast that do have talent. A lot of them do have a lot of talent in their fields. The other cast members, Kate McKinnon and Leslie Jones, are fine comedians in their own right. Kate McKinnon's very popular on Saturday Night Live. Look, Melissa McCarthy, I find incredibly just, she's gone to the point almost beyond an annoyance. She just does the same character in every film. I've almost never seen somebody riff the same character just constantly in comedies, and it's just become unfunny. Kristen Wiig's a very talented actress. She looks bored here and dialed down to the point of may as well not have been in the film. And the whole story, as you said, it is just from probably 10, 15 minutes in, you get exactly where everything's going. Probably not surprising sometimes in blockbuster films, but this film had millions upon millions of dollars at its disposal, and this is what they could come up with. It's pretty depressing, really, at the end of the day.
And really, it was mildly successful at the box office. As you said, there were a lot of people concerned about it before it opened. It opened to mildly good reviews, I've got to say.
I was very surprised. Honestly, I was. I thought when it came out, it was going to cop a hiding. And there were a lot of reviewers that actually stuck up for it in a lot of ways. And that's why I was actually somewhat looking forward to it when I finally sat down to watch it. I thought, this probably might not be as bad as everyone's made out and all these haters online and all the kind of vile stuff that was said about the film. But, oh, really, it just makes you wonder. It really does. And it did make a little bit of money, but I think at the end of the day it's still going to lose money once marketing and things like that have factored in. And I think this may be a dead-on-arrival revamp for the series. I'm sure there'll be other Ghostbuster versions, but it probably won't be, I guess, a generic redoing of what made the first one good with this mismatched team of kind of oddballs, and they go and fight these kind of creepy, crawly ghouls. And I even found it odd that the characters they were using for the villains and things, like the ghosts, they were all from kind of the old film.
Yes,
is there no other new ideas there? Or, I mean, your imagination can go wild and they decide to rehash some old, the Slimer and things like that, and the Marshmallow Man, the Michelin Man. It's just so tired. And the film has cameos from some of the old cast members of the film, and even that's just not even interesting at all. It's just factored in there and tapered on it, and it's just, oh, like you said, it's supposed to be a comedy, and I imagine that obviously it's got to have a bit of fantasy and action and things like that in it, but just none of it works. And the cast feel, as I said with Kristen Wiig, a bit bored and probably dialed back to be a kind of PG or M film that families could watch in a way. And I think it works against the cast. They probably normally factor more towards the adult material. And look, Paul Feig, the director of the film, had a huge hit in 2011 with Bridesmaids, and that just got him a bit of a license to go wild. And since then, he's done what you mentioned before. He's done Spy and The Heat and Ghostbusters. And just as Melissa McCarthy is repeating the same things, the director, Paul Feig, is doing the same things that made Bridesmaids successful, and he's a fan of ad-lib and things like that. But if Ghostbusters is where his career's headed, he's in for a pretty short career from here on out, I think, because I don't know if this type of comedy is going to sustain anybody heading forward.
Did you like the movie, though, Eddie?
Oh, look, the movie was fantastic, Rod. no, look, it really was. I don't think, I'm sure there'll be a lot of people watching this Ghostbusters that maybe even haven't seen the 1980s films. It's probably that long ago. I'm sure kids these days have more spectacular films to watch. And you said as well, I'm not the biggest Ghostbusters fan. Look, they're okay. They're a bit of fun. As a kid, certainly, I enjoyed watching them. But moving forward, they're not ones that I look upon that fondly. And there's a lot of other films from the 80s and that era that I probably like a lot more.
Well, this was, though, at the time, the biggest grossing comedy of all time. And Ghostbusters 2 wasn't as big, and in fact, I never even saw it, although you can buy it now in a two-pack. You can buy Ghostbusters 1 and 2, I'm sure you find that, and watch them and think, okay, that was all right, there are a few laughs in there. You watch this one, you think, well, where are the laughs? The people in it are not funny, the story is not funny.
And none of the characters are likable, the villain is just almost pointless.
Yes.
If you talk about generic, the villain in this film isn't even worth talking about. Yeah. Absolutely rubbish. I found that probably the best scenes other than Chris Hemsworth were probably all rehashes from the old films, almost like a little side joke to the old films, or a little nod and wink-wink to what happened before. They were probably the best bits about it, which is quite sad that the films are almost, you know, they're 30 years old. You look back in the 80s and you got, you know, Bill Murray, Howard Ramsay, Carl Weathers, Dan Aykroyd, Rick Moranis, they're in the Sigourney Weaver. They're really quality names in their respective fields. And you look at this cast and you wonder in 30 years' time, well, we'll be thinking the same. I'm not sure. And look, Kristen Wiig, I think, as we said, she's done some great things. The Skeleton Twins.
Curious film.
She's done some dark little films. And she's kind of tried to push away from what made her successful a few years ago. And I think that's great. But doing a film like this probably takes her back down a notch. And she probably has to work again to bring that back up. But there's a huge problem in Hollywood with remaking films. We all know that. And they're kind of beating old franchises, hitting people over the head with them and keep doing things. Even no one wanted this film. It's kind of what it was. People said, if we're going to do Ghostbusters, do something different, because the old ones are well-liked, and what more do you do with those? There's not really much more to be done. So why do it like this? I'm not sure.
Okay.
Yeah, look, mate, I'll be interested to know what big fans of the old film think of this one, but I'll be thinking that they're a bit the same of us, wondering where the laughs are and probably believing them as much as they believe in ghosts, because they're not here in this film.
Fair enough, too. Central Intelligence, a few laughs, and it's all over in about 90 minutes or so, or 100 minutes, so you can enjoy that. Ghostbusters goes on and on and on, and that's just the first 10 minutes.
Yep, near 2 hours, mate, which is a long haul.
Indeed. Eddie, thank you very much.
No worries. Thanks, Rod.
Eddie Iverme on DVDs.